You thought you'd gotten rid of us, didn't you? But you were wrong, old bean, because we're back with a vengeance.
From studios in Hollywood, California, rural southern Indiana, and the hinterlands of North Dakota, this is the Live, Laugh, Golf Podcast. And now, here are your hosts, Desert Duffer, OTB Lefty, and Jay Score.
Folks, welcome back to the big show. The gang's all here. OTP Lefty, what's good?
Man, just got back from Holland, Michigan. Ready to go to Aiken, South Carolina this weekend and ready to chat it up with
you
guys.
I've been to Aiken. I know why someone might go there, especially someone who loves golf. Why were you in Holland, Michigan?
Mainly for fellowship with some friends and spent some time on the beach of Lake Michigan and headed to Palmetto
fellowship.
Friday.
Fellowship is what Southern people, that means friendship, right? That means hanging out with the fellas. That means Saturdays for the boys kind of thing.
Not exactly. This is more like friends and family and friends who are like
you're going to play Palmetto. Palmetto first time. One of my favorite golf courses in the world. I envy you. You're playing with some people I know. They didn't invite me.
Yes, totally. True on both counts. And the preview that I can give the folks out there from Boots on the Ground was that you can hit a decent looking iron shot and your cart partner will congratulate you on your double bogey. Apparently around the greens, it can be.
You know, interestingly enough, this weekend I was watching a replay of the 1987 Masters tournament and husband of former hater and loser of the week, Julie Crenshaw, Ben Crenshaw was prominently featured. And they mentioned on the broadcast that Ben had played Palmetto that week in preparation for the Masters. I love that as someone who's played there, bought the belt.
I
bought the belt at Palmetto, JT.
I remember Larry Mize, 1987, right? Chipped in against our very own fearless leader, Greg Norman.
He did. It's a hell of a play.
One of many bad beats.
I don't want to get too hung up on this, but it was so much fun watching that. And the thing that that really jumped out to me is how much more personality everybody on that leaderboard had than 99% of, I don't want to name any tours in particular, but just better, more interesting personalities. Roger Maltby on that leaderboard.
Something else. Speaking of people with 99% more personality than everyone you know, Jay Score, how are you doing, buddy?
Thank you for asking, OTP. I'm honestly a little under the weather, a little congested. You can probably hear it in my voice, but I'm optimistic. The weekend was good. I got another round. I got 9 holes in with my kiddo. That was delightful. He's only 4, so he doesn't quite take my money yet, but it won't be long, I'm sure, before he does that.
Is it allowance time yet? Paying that kid to do nothing?
Well, he already knows how to get snacks and beverages from the cart and the snack shack at the club. So he's, you know, people know who he is already, and we just take a look at the account often to make sure it's not getting out of hand. But yeah, one more week of work left, and then we're out to Bandon. The countdown for my first pilgrimage to Bandon Dunes is counting down. So we are buzzing
this
right now.
So excited for
this
you.
Is a very first world podcast. I'm not going anywhere. Money is a sensitive subject with me right now. This was tax weekend for those of us who celebrate Extension Day. For our non-US fans, tax day in the United States is April 15th. The Internal Revenue Service likes to give us an automatic 6-month extension. So some of us procrastinators always have to do our taxes on or about October 15th. That was me this weekend. It didn't go well. I'm not happy. I'm certainly not taking any trips to Bandon anytime soon. But we will be in Miami for the Team Live Championship in a couple of weeks. So speaking of Live, we had a tournament this week, another Live event. It was Live Jeddah in King Abdullah Economic City. Brooks Koepka, your winner for his first win of any kind professionally since 2021 at the Waste Management on the PGA Tour, and that was his first win since 2019. So it's been a long road for Brooks Koepka.
I didn't get to see a lot of it. I mean, to be completely honest, the time schedule and the broadcast window for this thing was not convenient for an American viewer. But I did watch Brooks's final round in detail, and it was shaky there for a bit. The bat, like 11, 12, 13, he started to get kind of bad, but then hole 15 was quite a showing from him. He's in the sandy area, hits a second shot into the green and makes a long birdie putt to go to minus 11, which was huge for him with seven guys
in the hunt for winning this thing. I mean, that was, you know, I think three guys tied for fifth place and they were two strokes back. So this was a very tight tournament. Obviously went to a playoff. We should mention that Brooks beat Peter Uihlein, who we're a big fan of on this program and have been talking about for several events now, playing the best golf of his professional career. But it was a close tournament. Brooks was emotional after the win. Did you catch that? Did you guys catch any of the interview? I know, you know, he talked about the injuries he's gone through. I've heard some people say it felt practiced, fake. What did you think?
Absolutely not. Two demerits for me for saying the word absolutely so quickly. But winning golf tournaments is hard. I mean, winning your flight at your club is hard, and everyone can attest to that. When you're playing golf and it actually matters what happens, it's difficult to do. And at their level, even though they're so great, the stakes are so much higher and they run proportional. So no doubt he was keyed up today. No doubt he was wondering over the last 2 years when he's getting hurt over and over, am I ever going to win anything again ever? Because it's not like you can take a step down once you become a four-time major champion. Yeah, once you're number one in the world for a while, once you're the person that everybody thinks is a stone cold killer, do you still have it? Do you still have the thing you did before? Like,
yeah, well, he was a stone cold killer.
It's puzzling to me that anybody thinks that there was anything fake about that.
I think that's ridiculous. You're heartless, and I don't know what your problem is if you think that. It was pretty clearly genuine. He said in that interview, I didn't know if my career was over for a half a second. So it's nice to be able to come back and be able to win. The guy's been fighting through knee injuries, hip injuries. From what I understand, he thinks he's going to need a knee replacement surgery. He changed coaches. JT, we talked about Claude Harmon on the last episode. Working with him seems to have helped him turn the corner.
Right. He mentioned Claude and Cowan in the post-round interview and in the press conference after, I think, both times. So a lot of work has gone into this with multiple people. Something else I noted, he mentioned that stopping working out seems to be helping, feeling a lot better. So shout out Team JT. Brooks is with me now.
You know, I
never work
out.
I bet
ever. It also doesn't hurt to be part of a team, and not just a part of any team, but a team with your brother, whom you're very close to, and one of your good friends in Peter Uihlein, who he beat in the playoff, and former roommate. I think that's got to help.
I think,
you know, these guys who have spent so much of their career as complete loners on the road in an individual sport.
Yeah, it's great. You have these kinds of vulnerabilities that he mentions right at the end, like where he doesn't know if he's even going to be good enough to win again. Well, now you have someone to carry that burden with you. It's like we mentioned this before, that the personality types are the folks that were the early movers to live, all kind of centered around people who are really good in team competitions and people who are Ryder Cup stalwarts, the Reeds, the Garcias, the Stinsons, the Poulters, the people that like having someone with their arm around them, giving them encouragement and giving them the guts to go be as great as they can be.
So, J-Score, let me ask you this. I heard somebody on another podcast say recently that aspect, the team aspect, the fact that you have somebody to lean on may take away from the level of competition. Maybe that's a reason why the OWGR shouldn't be giving points. That and, of course, that there's nobody that you have to look over your shoulder at. You're not worried about losing your tour card. Any truth to that? You buying that at all?
I'm not buying it at all. I mean, I feel like at the end of the day, golf has always been about shooting a really low round and catching lightning in a bottle. And we'll get into some other really good rounds later in the pod here. But do these guys just suddenly want to not win anymore? I don't understand.
I guess the idea is that, you know, these guys are soft and they're not able to do it under the glare of the spotlight that is the PGA Tour and having to worry about who's coming down the pipes on the KFT Tour. And I'm not buying it either. And this is what they're saying about...
I'm not either, because honestly, nobody cared. I mean, honestly, does anybody even care about the PGA Tour other than diehard PGA Tour super Tiger fans? Because I think that's what it is, right? Is like Tiger Woods came, changed it all, and people are obsessed with the tour being the standard, but really at the end of the day, like when it really boils down to it, it's majors.
So
who's got majors?
I feel like we need to talk about the things that they're saying, and I don't want to call them haters or losers, but they're critics. These people who can't seem to find anything good that's done on the LIV Tour or done by any players on the LIV Tour. And so that brings us to Uihlein, who has had just a spectacular first season. We should say he was in that playoff coming in second instead of first, ended up costing him $6 million. If he had come in first, he Ouch. Not only would have won $4 million for the first place finish in the tournament, but he would have won another $8 million bonus for coming in second on the season. Instead, he came in second on the week, so he only won $2.1 million, and he came in third on the season, so he only won $4 million. So $6 million. He still ended up winning $8 million on the year or something. But people are saying Peter Uihlein wasn't a guy who was ever able to compete on the PGA Tour. Doesn't this say something about the level of competition on the LIV Tour that he's been one of the two or three best players all year?
Well, was Peter Uihlein also feeling the heat a little bit? Because his round 370 with some double bogeys in the mix was not great to see. So,
but J-Score,
did he feel the pressure? Did
he
choke?
He not feel the pressure with $8 million on the line. But at the same time, he birdied the 18th hole three times in a row. He did it in regulation, and he did it on the first two playoff holes to stay in it with a four-time major champion. So I'm not going to give Peter Uihlein a hard time. Remember, this is a guy, his highest world ranking, for whatever that's worth, and not that much these days, but his highest career world ranking is 48th. And he came in, by the way, he came in tied for second on the season-long points list. He lost the tiebreaker to Brandon Grace because Brandon Grace won the Portland tournament, and he beat Patrick Reed, who, tough luck for Patrick Reed, tied with 79 points on the season with Grace and Uihlein. He gets no bonus money because he lost two tiebreakers. That's, again, Patrick Reed made over $8 million in the season. He's not crying for somebody who didn't win, but.
Yeah, I've got a little bit on Uihlein and strength of field and the people that you couldn't beat before, but you can beat them now. The Cam Smiths, Dustin Johnson, Patrick Reed, Sergio Garcia, Neiman, they all played this week in the LIV event, and he beat all of them. If we were in some other city in some other circumstance, it would be an encouraging thing to see this. So it doesn't have anything to do with Peter Uihlein. It has to do with people who just can't see anymore. Yeah.
And you know, he finished T10 in his last Euro Tour, DP World Tour event just a few months ago. Rory was in that. He lost by three strokes to Rory. So this idea that, oh, he's just only doing it on the tour. No, sometimes people play the best golf of their lives. And clearly that's what Peter Uihlein is doing right now. And this is a guy who was an accomplished amateur player. It's saying he's not some nobody. This guy has game.
Yeah, I think it is fair to say that brother might have ran out of gas at the end, because after hitting a perfect shot from basically the same position twice, then we sent one. There was talk of a rock in a bunker, but
there were a lot of rocks in play all week at Jeddah.
You know, I thought the announcer booth really missed the boat on that one. It was like, oh, well, this isn't as bad. It's not as bad as it could be, or it's worse than the previous lies. I mean, that was in a bad spot. It was right up against the lip. Had to go straight up over it. He says it hit a rock. He hit a rock. I'm not inclined to disbelieve him, but it was a bad lie. There's no doubt about that.
Anyway, trying to get a big win like this, cement some stuff, there's a door there and you have to be able to kick it down, right? And it probably took a lot to get him into this position inside. He fought some demons during the round. He made a double. He had some other stuff happen. You get into a playoff with Brooks Koepka as your teammate. I mean, there's another tribute to the competitive aspect of this, because all they would have had to have done was talk for about 35
and
seconds.
Split, like,
and Koepka would have ripped one straight in the water, and it would have been over, and Uihlein would have won the tournament and taken on the bonus money that went with it.
Yeah. You're,
it would have been really easy.
Man. You're a bad man. I didn't even think about that. But yeah, good on them for playing for it. You're right. I hadn't even thought about that. So good on them. But as we said, it was a close tournament all the way through.
Very close.
Just finishing one stroke out of the playoff were both Joaquin Neiman and Sergio Garcia. Neiman equaled the day's low round with 5 under 65. They tied for third, and that was worth $1.275 million. You got to love it. Garcia, Sergio, his share of team winnings, $1.375 million on the year. Fireballs are forced to be reckoned with going into the team playoffs.
They really are. I saw some Carlos Ortiz action. I felt like he could have been in a better situation. I think at one point he waited. There's a question about whether a boulder of sorts was a movable obstruction. He waited 10 plus minutes for somebody to get over when they're literally all week have been moving giant rocks like that. And then he hits a shot and, you know, just clearly frustrated. But fireballs are,
you know, I don't know if that was the thing. It was a rock, and there's always some question about whether the rock is embedded into the ground and then maybe you can't move it as a loose impediment. Also,
there was some sort of frond.
His ball was resting up against a desert palm frond, which that seems pretty clear. Go ahead and try to move it if you want to, but if you move the ball, you're going to be in trouble. Anyone else jump out at you for their play this week? We had Matt Wolf, Paul Casey, and DJ tying individually for fifth. They each took home $816,667. We should mention that Dustin Johnson, with that fifth place tie, earned Desert Duffer another win.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so you guys will each Venmo me 10 bucks.
Venmo on the way.
My fourth win of the season. Cam Smith playing in his fourth live event, tied for 21st, tied with DeChambeau, Kokrak, and 24-year-old James Piatt. Is it Piatt or Piatt? I have the hardest time with that name.
You're asking me for pronunciation advice? I don't think that's a good idea.
So Smith finished in 10th place in the individual standings, despite playing two or three fewer events than most everyone ahead of him. For Neiman, the T5 was his third top five finish in four events on the LIV Golf Tour. Joaquin's playing great. He's going to have to remake that team, though. His Torque GC, they've got, as I said on the last episode, one of three teams not to earn even a share of a top three finish. So Joaquin, he needs some help, I think.
I also wanted to mention not Pat Perez, final round 77. There was a moment there checking the scoreboard. I wondered if he would break 80. Things were definitely squirrely on the front nine there for him. Just riding the coattails of the four aces, your four aces, Duff. Do you think he hangs on next year? Do you think he keeps a spot on four aces next year?
Yes, I do, because I think DJ likes him. I think the team likes having him around. I've got some numbers in front of me. Interestingly, I was looking at, so we've wrapped up the individual season on the inaugural LIV Golf campaign, and I've got some numbers. There were 47 players in the first season who made at least $1 million individually. That's not including any team money. Do you know where Pat Perez finished?
Can't wait to hear.
49th. Not that bad. 961,000 individually. He earned another 3,062,000 as part of the Four Aces juggernaut. But, you know, people talked about, well, you know, what's going to happen to the guys who don't hang on. Is there anyone you want to talk about? I mean, Mark Leishman came in 50th on the money list. He played four events. He made $905,500 individually, another $62,000 team. People that people have talked about, Travis Smyth, who's a recent winner. He won last month on the Asian Tour. He played three events, won $471,000. David Puge, three events, $404,000. So everyone has done well.
So on the team element, and like Pat Perez, at the end of the day, kind of to circle back to your earlier point, Duff, about, you know, the PGA Tour and does it really matter that much in the grand scheme of things? And my, to put a finer point on it, I care about majors pretty much. And that's kind of where people end up falling in the echelon of their career. How they did always boils down to majors. So to me, pro golf is all about entertainment. And I got to say, at the end of the day, I'm very entertained by the dichotomy of Pat Perez as an individual contributor on LIV Tour versus the team result. And I find that entertaining. And that's what I'm honestly week over week for the most part, other than the big events in golf. I just want to be entertained. So I love it.
Who's the equivalent? I mean, is there a guy like him? Like, you know, he's not Ringo. Ringo was good. Ringo was a pretty good drummer. Do we have a comp? I can't think of who in the Rat Pack. I don't know. All those guys were pulling their own weight. Who is this Pat might Perez be con- on this, the Four Aces?
This might be controversial, but perhaps Ozzy Osbourne and Black Sabbath.
Oh, come on. I mean, how can you say that? That would mean that Pat Perez would have to go on after.
He's got a great voice. He's got a great voice, but he didn't write any of the music. He didn't write any of the lyrics.
I'm not sure how many. Maybe this will help. Probably a lot of our British
good albums, good results. Yeah. But I mean, as far as individual contributions, do you think Ozzy really pulled his weight there? I don't know.
All right. So the teams are set for Live Miami at Trump Doral in 2 weeks. The top four seeds are the Four Aces, of course. Just blew out the field, 152 points. Crushers edged out the Fireballs, 96 points for the second seed. Fireballs in third with 93. And Stinger Golf Club rounds out the top four with 72 points. Those four teams will get byes. And then in order, Smash, Majestics, Torque, High Flyers, Ironheads, Cliques, Punch, and Niblicks. Those are the teams that will play on Friday. Friday, just those teams will play. The winners will face the top four seeds. And then the winners of those four matches will go on to the Stroke Play Championship on Sunday in Miami.
Yeah, I like the format where the people who come out of that the best get to pick their opponents. I think that's an interesting wrinkle. And also wanted to get this thing in for the fourth place Stinger GC. Brendan Grace came and toughed it out and wound up fighting for his bonus money. Proud of him.
Yeah, he actually didn't earn any points. So he didn't have to tough it out. If he didn't show up, he was still coming in second. But good for Brendan to get after.
We're providing encouragement to our guys anywhere we can. It has been a tough month back at the Hive. And we're just hoping that we can come out and find some honey in Doral here in just a few days.
Good luck to you and the South Africans. As I said, Smash won the team competition. The Fireballs came in second. My Four Aces and the Crushers tied for third. I think that's about it for Live Jetta, unless you guys have any other thoughts. What about the crowds? You know, a lot of people wanted to talk about the crowds. I'm not going to do a Trump inauguration thing.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Was it 100 degrees?
Yeah. It didn't look like there were a lot of people out there. That's not surprising. The Saudi event that Harold Varner won 6 months ago or so, there weren't people there either. It's clear that golf is not yet a big sport in Saudi Arabia. That's part of what I think the Public Investment Fund is trying to do with this league. They're putting the product in front of people. Maybe they'll take to it. Maybe they won't. I don't know. As for the TV numbers on YouTube, so I'll be honest, I saw the playoff live. That was the only bit of golf that I saw live on TV this weekend from Live Golf because I live on the west coast of the United States. It was 2 o'clock in the morning when it started. It was 7 o'clock in the morning when it ended. Those are my prime sleeping hours, J-Score. So, you know, there's one viewer who wasn't counted on YouTube.
Why? There's so much golf on TV too. Why would you set an alarm and get up for completely honest with it? You know, I will for the especially galleries and stuff and the lack of people on site, I did just want to say, I mean, I'm one of the ones who during COVID found the lack of a gallery to kind of be a feature.
Yeah, I love
it. And not
it's
a bug.
Great
so
to not
generally,
people yelling mashed potatoes. I mean, that's.
Yeah. Yeah. Generally, I like it. So majors, of course, different setting. You know, you got the patrons at Augusta who behave with a certain decorum. The galleries there kind of add to it. But generally, week over week, a lack of fans on site doesn't really bother me as a viewer.
Any other questions you guys have about total money won at the end of the individual season?
I'm straight, man.
Matt Wolf at $4 million. Good for you, Matt Wolf. Great move. Taylor Gooch, $6.374 million. Counting both the individual and team. So happy for those guys. In Europe this weekend, the Andalusia Masters. It's the DP World Tour. It was won by a player who's played 3 live events. You know who it is?
Adrian Otegi.
Oh, yes, that's
the pronunciation we've gotten. I still screwed it up.
Adrian Otegi cruised in the final round to win the Andalusia Masters by 6 shots. It was his first victory in his native Spain. He had 4 birdies and only 1 bogey and a 3-under 68. Left him at 19 under after 4 rounds. He was 7 shots better than the previous record at Valderrama, the famed Valderrama. So he was excited. You would think the DP World Tour, the host of this event, they'd be excited too. It certainly didn't seem that way if you were on Twitter or if you followed the DP World Tour's website, because they pretty much went radio silence on the fact that Otegi was leading and was clearly going to win this tournament. They were rooting as hard as they could for one of his countrymen, Angel Hidalgo, all week. He's another Spaniard. He came in fourth, 11 strokes behind Otegi at minus eight.
Yeah, Spain continues to be on fire, though. Good for them. I did watch Otegi's round, and I don't have the data golf in front of me. Maybe you've got it, Duff, but it looked like he was putting incredibly well, which is really cool to see. I don't know if the greens are pretty easy there. I don't know too much about it, but...
Yeah, so look, the guy's good. It's his fourth European Tour title. He had a 6-stroke lead heading into the final round. He played 3 events on the LIV Tour. He hasn't played his fourth, which raises some questions for me. I wonder if I had to guess, there's some sort of option contract at work here, right? So Otegi signed his contract with LIV Golf that says, if you play 4 events, we've either got to give you some cash bonus or you have a right to, for example, a guaranteed number of starts in next season. That's the only thing I can see that could be behind the fact that he's not playing in any recent LIV Golf events, because the guy has game.
And he was aggressive. He kept pulling driver the whole time. He had a big enough cushion. He could have throttled down a little bit, played safe, but he kept pulling driver on that back nine final round. And I love seeing that. So
what do you guys make of the television coverage, like willfully avoiding LIV speak or any kind of credence to LIV Golf or any kind of respect paid to LIV Golf?
Go ahead.
I was going to say, I'm not really surprised, right? And Duff, we're probably saying the same thing, right? I mean, it's a competitor product. So why would you give it free airtime, especially when the product, you know, doesn't have airtime on TV in the United States and on any sort of major cable network? So I don't blame them.
I don't think it is a competitor product, because I think the product that DP World Tour is putting on the field from week to week is not at the same standard or even close to what LIV Golf is putting on. But I think there's the issue of the ongoing litigation. Remember, Otegi played in the first 2 LIV events in London and Portland. He missed New Jersey. He played in Boston. But he was one of the players who sued after London, the DP World Tour, to permit himself to play in these events that he was otherwise qualified for. Keith Pelley had tried to suspend and fine them. I've heard some podcasters, you know, I was listening to a podcast yesterday and somebody said, well, LIV Golf has failed in every respect other than those that they could throw money at. And one of their examples was they lost the TRO hearing here in the United States. True. They got in front of a hostile judge here in the United States and the players lost their effort to play in the FedEx Cup playoffs. However, their equivalent peers over in Europe, Ian Poulter, Adrian Otegi, and others, won the equivalent of their TRO. And that's why we see them playing every single week on the European Tour. So I understand why Keith Pelley, who is doing, well, he seems to be doing nothing to save his job, but certainly he wants to keep his job. I'm sure he does not want to see success by the people that he tried to ban from his tour. I'm sure he does not want to see people come out to see those players, because he's trying to defend what he's done by getting into bed with the PGA Tour, by being the PGA Tour's lackey, by creating a feeder tour, by absolutely ruining what has been decades of work by the people, the Europeans, I suppose, in front of him. How did this Canadian end up in charge of the European Tour in the first place? Do either of you guys know that?
No.
Listen, nothing against our Canadian friends, except those that wear blue eyeglasses. I mean, this guy is just, I can't even stand looking at this guy. He drives me insane, and he's an absolute cancer on the DP World Tour. But I understand why they are trying to memory hold these players. But you can't do it when a guy's winning by 6 strokes, when he's setting a record, a tournament record by 7 strokes. You just make yourself look foolish. Even when the DP World Tour Twitter account did decide to finally acknowledge Otegi, because it was clear that he was going to coast to this win, they weren't tagging him. They had been adding the other players all week long. Should say, second place didn't even end up being Hidalgo. Second place went to Sweden's Joachim Lagergren. And then he was 3 shots ahead of third place Minwoo Lee of Australia. That's Minji's brother.
Okay, so if you're a European Tour player right now, DP World Tour player, pardon me, and you have a big year planned, you're improving, but you don't want to play golf in the U.S., is there really any other option for you? I mean, honestly, you're just going to become the next Colin Montgomery? Because aren't they playing for basically like 30 cents on the dollar week in and week out for what gets played for on the PGA Tour?
Yeah, well, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but J-Score, I think you said Otegi won just over $500,000. I
mean, yeah, 511,000.
That's pretty good money. I'm sorry, it's not PGA Tour money. If you want to play on the PGA Tour, you should try to get there. If you want to play on the LIV Golf Tour, you should try to get there. I don't, you know, I'm a big, they want to talk about earn it in the dirt. I don't have any pity for guys who aren't making enough money playing golf. Signals to me that you're probably not good enough to make a living playing golf if you're not making a living playing golf. And I don't want to hear that, well, why doesn't the PGA Tour just give us a little bit more money, or earn it, do better, play better, or get an insurance sales job. You know, I don't have a lot of time for that.
I can settle for that. I really like the answers about Otegi. I think the strategies that they used makes sense, and I think what you guys said about what they were doing makes sense. So that pleases me very much, you guys. You've impressed me. Okay,
cool. I loved his long birdie putt on 18 too. It just felt like an exclamation point sort of put back slam dunk kind of in the face. Like, yeah, I just did that kind of thing. The passive aggressiveness all week on social media was tough to see. I didn't see a lot of it, but hearing you walk through it, Duff, was I don't know, not surprising, but maybe a little bit
gross,
disappointing.
It's sad. But again, this guy has game. He's played in ATP Fourth World Tour starts since June. He's finished in a tie for third at the Kazoo Classic in July, and he had three other top 15s, including this week's title. So the man can play. I frankly hope that he's not stuck over there on that feeder tour. I hope Greg and the LIV Tour bring him back, because I'd like to see him next year in the 14 events. I want to say, you know, Waco could use him, I think.
Sure.
Perfect
could.
Candidate to play for the Torque with Waco. So,
I suppose I should, you know, the 511,000 euro or whatever it was he won, it pales in comparison to what Keegan took home over in the PGA Tour Zozo Championship this week, outdueling Ricky Fowler. Very confused on what year it is exactly and what's going on there. Another tournament. I didn't watch much of this tournament either.
Yeah,
caught a couple of jokes on the jokes and the memes on Twitter were great, but Keegan, I can't stand watching him putt. The aim point is out of control, and the PGA Tour struggles because they can't show aim point because they don't want to give free advertising to that system. So that, there's just, I mean, a lot that, of not that, seeing Keegan. He takes forever.
That's just a J-Score conspiracy theory, right? That's a Golf Illuminati thing. I mean, there's that. You haven't read any credible reports. You haven't read on like thegolfspectator.com that was something that was being banned. Is that just you?
You know, I've maybe heard from some sources and some people who feel similarly, or maybe have good reason to think that aim point kind of makes you have limited camera time, because the tour loves showing putts, easy to film, easy to show. And if you're walking around doing aim point, rumor is the tour called him and said, hey, can we have a little business deal here and we'll show this? And supposedly, the Aimpoint boys had wanted nothing to do with that. So,
well, it's brutal. Everyone's favorite mass hole, Keegan, did win the 2022 Zozo. He shot a 68 in the final round. He clipped Ricky by one stroke. Ricky had a share of the 36 hole lead, and he had the 54 hole lead all alone. Obviously, he didn't close the deal. That moves him to 2 for 9 with a 54 hole lead and 1 for 11. With the 36-hole lead in his career on the PGA Tour. The T2...
Ricky should really be thanking the LIV Tour for guys coming out of the money earnings and him getting a spot back in. And yeah, look at what he's doing. He switched to Butch Harmon. We talked about Brooks Koepka making a coach change. Ricky's back with Butch Harmon, and he's playing cavity backs now.
The Harmons are a weird vibe. Do you know anything about them, JT, that I'm not familiar with? Because I saw some comments by Butch recently that said they weren't trying to grow the game, and he was speaking about LIV Golf. And then obviously Claude is working with Brooks. I mean, these guys like each other. They work together. Aren't they part of the same company?
Okay, so here's what I know. Their dad, Claude Sr., 1948 Masters champion, pro at Wingfoot, and legendary, gruff, ball-busting kind of guy. Harmon, Butch Harmon, Claude Jr., military guy. Mickey went back to Butch, who's his late 70s. He's an older fellow. I think it's a no-nonsense approach. I mean, I think he restores people's confidence. He puts the chip back on a player's shoulder. He says, don't you know how good you are? It's time to go kick the door down. Those are the kinds of things he does. Because Butch has instant results with people. Like, because he just renews their mind.
But back to whether Butch and Claude, the younger Claude, not Butch's brother, but Butch's son, are they on good terms? Do they work together currently?
Do you know anything about that? Oh, I couldn't say. I didn't even know that was the question, man. I don't know that for sure.
Yeah, I don't know. That was my question. I don't know if you knew it or not.
I can't imagine what they would have to compete over. Or what disagreements they would have.
I just found it weird reading this statement or this comment from Butch just the other day disparaging LIV Golf when his son is over there coaching one of its marquee players. That's all. That's where my question was coming from. But anyway, it was, you know, it's the Zozo. What are they doing with the Zozo? The Zozo is in Japan, obviously. Hideki Matsuyama won last year. He was unable to defend. He came in 40th this year. Hideki in the first event in 2019 was runner-up to Tiger Woods. They had been playing the CJ Cup following the Zozo in Korea, which makes sense. If you're going to have your PGA Tour players fly to Asia, it would make sense to play at least two events while they're there. But after the Zozo, these guys are flying directly back to the tournament, still bearing the name of CJ. They're playing the CJ Cup in South Carolina at Congaree this weekend. What's the deal? I know that South Korea is not closed for COVID. They're playing an LPGA event over there this week, and we'll talk about it in a minute. But what's going on? Why are they doing this? It's so stupid.
I have no response other than, you know, is FireJMonahan.com active yet? I don't know. I have no other response other than what's the status of that website? Has the owner put anything up yet? I'm not sure.
I don't know. It sounds like you guys don't have a lot to say about the Zozo Cup. It was happening over there in Japan. Also tying for second was Andrew Putnam. He got his 15th runner-up finish on the PGA Tour. He's a nobody. It's now been 1,353 days since Ricky Fowler's last PGA Tour win. That was at the Waste Management in 2019. He moved up to 106th in the world. Is Ricky back, or is he just playing against inferior competition?
I'm rooting for him. I can't not root for Ricky, but I don't know. He's new clubs, new coach. Maybe he's back. Trending, certainly.
Yeah, he's an old 33, though. I mean, he did a lot of living and played in a lot of golf tournaments as a very young man, was a world beater when he was very, very young. If he still has the hunger to keep the motor fired up and keep going after this in his mid-30s with a family now, could he be the next kind of Stricker guy who got really, really close to the top and then fell off quite a ways and then came back?
I have a hard time believing.
That's kind of what that's.
Yeah,
that's
I don't think a family is. Helps you. All I've seen in my limited experience, I see J-Score is nearly always late to report podcasts because of his family. It's hard for me to believe that it could help a player's game to have a small child. But I mean, what do I know? J-Score, you're the expert.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a nanny or an au pair or anything like that. I'm sure Ricky's got a whole team back home with his, you know, chef and other, you know, the whole squad. So he's living in a different atmosphere than I am on that front. So, but he's got a lot of runway left theoretically, right? He could enter this a new phase if he can keep it in front of him and putt well again.
Well, how old is he? Is he 30? He's 33 or he's 33.
Yeah. The old rule back in the day was you either started winning majors when you were 32 or you were finished winning majors when you were 32. Now, there have been a lot of people that have come and gone since that rule existed. But there is such a thing as the rarity of people who last this long in the spotlight, almost for any reason. And he came right out on tour after, I think, 2 years at Oklahoma State. So he's like in his 12th or 13th time.
I just want to be clear. You're not suggesting, or maybe you're suggesting that it's possible, but you're not predicting that Ricky Fowler will win a major. Are you OTP?
I don't think I am. No. Okay,
good. Good. Because he won't.
I'm saying that there's a strong chance that through his willingness to continue to participate, and he will play a heavy schedule as his FedEx thing grows and as his game kind of comes back, his FedEx thing, his FedEx ranking. As this year goes, he could be the feel-good story of the year. This could be the thing that makes golf fun again in the United States of America, makes individual golf entertainment fun. Of course he won't sniff in a major, but man, watch out Greensboro.
Sure. I think we can say, maybe, I'm not sure we can say, but I like Ricky Fowler. Do all three of us like Ricky Fowler? I think Ricky Fowler
kind of sounds like we do. Sounds like we all do.
Yeah, I'm on Team Ricky. I think he's been unfairly maligned. I don't think he's going to win any majors, but I would love to see him do well. You know, I'd see, by all accounts, just one of the nicest guys in professional golf. So rooting for Ricky.
Certainly.
I don't have anything bad to say about Ricky. No. All right, moving on. Now, better question. You don't think Ricky's going to win a major, or I don't think Ricky's going to win a major. What about Lexi Thompson? Let's go to you first, J-Score. Another major for Lexi Thompson. She has one. She won the Dinosaur. Another one, yes or no?
I think so. I think so. I think she's showing flashes of being able to play well enough to win one.
Yeah, well, that leads us to this weekend at the Aramco Team Series at Trump Ferry Point in New York City. Lexi won for the first time professionally in over 3 years. It was a 54-hole event. She shot a 3-under par 69 on Saturday. That was the final round, an 11-under total. She's world number 8. She beat Brooke Henderson and Madeline Sagstrom, other LPGA stars playing in this LET event in New York City. Won by 3 shots after she'd taken a 2-stroke lead with a 65 on Friday. It was her first win since the 2019 ShopRite Classic. That was her 11th win on the LPGA Tour. This was her second win on the LET Tour. Her only previous victory on the LET came in 2011 at the Dubai Ladies Masters. And Lexi, these days, barely heads over to Europe. Like, she went over there for the Women's Open because she felt like she had to. Who are we kidding? She skipped the Evian, which is a major. She doesn't play in the LET. You know what she won? Ask me, OTP, what did Lexi win? Go ahead, ask me what she won for this victory.
What did Lexi Thompson win for her victory at
75
the
grand. 75 grand, JT. Lexi doesn't roll out of bed for 75 grand. So you know what that means? Lexi got a big fat check to appear at this tournament, just like Nelly Korda did, just like Brooke Henderson did, and probably just like Madeline Sagstrom did. So where's all the outrage? I mean, we got to talk about this isn't politics. This is hypocrisy. We do talk hypocrisy, and we do address claims of whataboutism on this podcast. So what do we have to say about the relative silence about this Golf Channel stooges, Brandel Chamblee and Amon Lynch, last week's Hater of the Week? Is this any different from LIV Golf? You go first, JT.
I don't think it is. I don't see the outrage to begin with about the funding source, about the investor. I never have. The United States government does business with the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia on multiple fronts.
Careful.
No, I'm just saying, no, those are just facts. So everybody does business worldwide that's involved in its capitalism that J-Score despises so much. I just don't get it. Like, this is a big leg up for women's golf and the Ladies European Tour. If they're really playing for a $75,000 winner's prize, half of the Ladies European Tour couldn't afford to fly over here to play for.
Well, yeah, that's kind of the point, though. So I want to talk about that for a second, right? So this is they call it the team series, obviously, because there's a team component, but the individual component is what Lexi won, and she won 75 grand for that. The total purse for the individual component is $500,000. $172,000 of that $500,000 was won by Lexi Thompson, Nelly Korda, Brooke Henderson, and Madeline Sagstrom. four LPGA stars who certainly don't need the money. So that leaves you $328,000, and you wonder, what's going on? Is this really helping the ladies' game? That's one question. But the bigger question to me is, these are six events funded by six events with the name of the Saudi Arabian state-owned oil company on them. And there's a subtitle to the Saudi Aramco series. It's presented by the Public Investment Fund of Saudi Arabia. If you believe in sports washing, and if you're being honest about the reason why you're opposed to LIV Golf, and that's because you believe it's sports washing, you are an absolute hypocrite to look past what's going on in women's golf. Because LIV Golf, the idea of sports washing, what it's supposed to do is it's supposed to put in your mind a positive connotation with the name you're hearing with sports. The way you do it is you say, presented by the Saudi Public Investment Fund. The way you do it is calling it Aramco, not calling it LIV Golf, who 99%+ of the world has no idea has anything to do with Saudi Arabia if it weren't for Amon Lynch telling you so. So aren't you an absolute hypocrite by not being up in arms about this and being up in arms about LIV Golf? It doesn't really have anything to do with sports washing. It has to do with the PGA Tour, and it has to do with where your bank account is being funded from. And that's the Golf Channel. And that's the PGA Tour. That's what it's about. That's the hypocrisy, as far as I'm concerned.
I'm going to have a hard time telling you you're wrong, because it feels like there's selective outrage where, like, LIV and the existence of LIV is being used as some sort of lightning rod to generate this discussion, even though there are, I mean, you swing a bar stool and you find examples of it all over the place. With money coming into and out of countries for big events with horrific rights. And honestly, maybe, you know, this is, you know, maybe this is what helps sort of force the issue on improvement within the country. I know it doesn't always happen. And maybe looking at World Cup with Qatar is not a great example, because there's tons of problems there.
But I agree. I agree that you want to change things from the inside. But I want to stay with hypocrisy. I want to get back to, you know, JT, your favorite guy, Little Lord McIlroy. This guy's already admitted that he doesn't have a problem with Saudi money. He's a problem with messing with the PGA Tour. He's already come out and said, if this money is coming in, let's just get it in the ecosystem. He just wants to wet his beak. He doesn't care about sports washing. And the truth is, at least McIlroy is semi-honest about it. Amon Lynch, last week's hater and loser of the week, he's not honest about it. So they had to address it on the Golf Channel. So he went on there this week and he wrapped himself into a pretzel trying to explain why it's different on the LET tour than it is with the LIV tour. And he just kept saying, you can make a nuanced argument that there's a difference between ownership and sponsorship when it comes to professional golf. And this is perhaps soft sports washing. Soft sports washing? Soft. Are you kidding me? He called it, that's a direct quote. He called it soft sports washing. If you're just sponsoring six events, it's okay. But if you own eight, it's bad. And the crazy thing is, they keep telling us that LIV Golf will never be profitable. So why do you care who owns an unprofitable enterprise, right? Like, oh, but sponsorship is okay. So you're telling me that, so FedEx apparently paid $750 million for the latest extension to sponsor the PGA Tour. $750 million over 10 years. So if
which
the
is
Saudis,
ridiculous in and of itself, by the way.
If the Saudis said, hey, we got $1 billion starting in 2028, we want to make it, instead of the FedEx Cup, we want it to be the Gulf Saudi Cup. And instead of the Corn Ferry Tour, we'd like it to be the Aramco Tour. And we want the year-long points race to be, it's going to have to be the race to Jeddah, and we'll do the tour championship in Jeddah. That would be okay. That's okay because it's soft sports washing. It's sponsorship, not ownership. You can make a claim. You can make a nuanced argument.
Just splitting hairs where the money's coming from. Just how, not even splitting hairs where the money's coming from, but how the money is delivered, which is a new one for me. That's,
it's absurd.
No one has a leg to stand on as far as this stuff goes. For the folks that are in the news business, the emergence of another outlet for sports entertainment provides more news. So what do they really have to complain about? As long as they can continue to stir things about the same thing over and over. Because if you're in, you're in. And if you're out, you're out. Right? So if you're just reporting what happens, then you just talk about what happens. But if you're in the commentary business, you have to stay with a position for a long enough time until something happens so you can change it. So you can have that thing. And then you can talk about nuance a little bit. So that you can keep the conversation going forever and keep collecting those mediocre checks.
Yeah, well, the problem, I think the problem, JT, and we've seen ESPN and other organizations have this same issue, is that you try to have both a news department and a production department, right? So Amon would love to crap on the Aramco series. The problem is, the reality is, Golf Channel is in bed with the PGA Tour. And so it's easy for them to say, you know what? Go on, Amon. Do whatever you want. Go after that Live Golf thing, because that helps them, because that's antagonistic to their partner. It gets a little bit dicier when they broadcast the LET and they have a contract to broadcast the Aramco series. That was supposed to be that New York tournament this weekend that Lexi won. That was supposed to be broadcast live on Golf Channel from like 9 a.m. to noon. I think that was West Coast. They ended up moving it to the middle of the night on tape delay. They took it off the air. But it was still, if you have the NBC Sports app like I do, that's what I watched. That was the golf that I watched this weekend. I watched Lexi because I'm a big fan. But they're just wrapping themselves up, trying to comply with contracts. And, you know, it just makes me sick. I'm so... I got to do Amon. We'll move on. But while we're here with Amon Lynch, that was only half of what irritated me with Amon this week, you know, coming so off.
What's the other half then, Duff? Let's let it out. Let's get it all out here.
Yeah. Coming off his big victory, his, you know, finally winning the Hater and Loser of the Week, he had, you know, his latest column in USA Today was, you know, the usual. That's all he does, right? He just recycles different versions of his anti-Liv columns. So this week, the brilliant Amon decided to get into gaslighting. Oh, it's gaslighting. So he took offense with Phil Mickelson's interview at Liv Jetta this week, where Phil said he never did an interview with Alan Shipnuck. That's not news here. Phil does not believe that phone call that Shipnuck reported was on the record. He doesn't believe he gave Shipnuck permission to report what he said. Golf Twitter, golf media, everyone had a field day with Phil Mickelson saying he never did an interview with Alan Shipnuck this week. And Amon decided to write a column about it. It was the usual 900 whatever words, you know, live evil, blah, 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 blah. I cut just a little bit that I'd like to read, and I won't do the Irish accent, but here it is. It's long been obvious that some live figures are blinded by personal grievance. What's becoming more apparent is that others in the live orbit are choosing an alternate reality, one in which the application of rules is discriminatory, in which cash trumps competitive legacy, in which an army of Twitter bots represents a groundswell of popular support, and in which critics are branded enemies of the truth. And here in a parenthetical, he says, to Norman's well-known pal, who sent my friend an unsolicited text describing me thus, and as a fudge packer, I'll be circling back to you in due course. Now, there's so much that I'm offended by in this paragraph of Amon's. First of all, this has become the thing for these guys, right? Everybody who disagrees with them is a bot.
Yeah. It's just kind of the way the game works nowadays, though, Duff. I think, like, you know, I'm not going to get into the politics side of things, but it's just kind of the way it works these days is you just if Phil were to have said and acknowledged it was in an interview, you know what direction it would have gone. You know what Amon would have said then as far as that goes. So it's a lose-lose. So you just got to ride it out and everybody's doing it.
Yeah. All right. Fine. I mean, it's disgusting. It's just one of the worst parts about the discourse in this country or the world right now that anybody, I mean, it's just so tired.
I'll tell you what, competitive legacy does not pay the bills. Competitive legacy does not set my family up for future success. So,
yeah, but I want to get to the real thing. And remember, we talked about Amon and his organization last week. He works for USA Today, which I described as a rag because that's what it is. But the guy who founded USA Today, I think his name was Neuwirth. He was as big of a hater of anonymous sources as I am. And I think this is one of the biggest problems that we have in golf journalism, in journalism overall. Today is the crutch that has become anonymous sources. I went to journalism school. I have a degree in journalism. We were taught that sources will always try not to go on the record. Yeah, it's easy to throw stones when you don't have to put your name to it. That's the whole point. Journalism is hard. If you want to get a story, you need to make someone go on the record. But that's not what we do now. Everything is one player said and another player said. And this is part of why Alan Shipnuck finds himself in the position that he's in with somebody like John Rahm, one of the greatest golfers in the world and a well-respected guy the world over, saying in his press conference at the FedEx Cup playoffs, Alan Shipnuck, most reliable source in golf, and rolling his eyes. Well, the reason why you get that is because you play fast and loose with these, they used to be rules in journalism. Anonymous sources were a last resort, that editors should not allow reporters to use them unless they confirm with that source that they know who it is. They know why he needs to be anonymous. But we don't do that anymore. Everything is one player said and a caddy told me and another player and another player. But this is where we've gotten to where not only is it used in that way, but now it's just gossip. It's used as a, this is Amon having a little schoolyard cat fight, he thinks, with Greg Norman. To Greg Norman's well-known pal, that's anonymous, I won't tell you who it is. I know who it is, but I won't tell you. Who sent my friend, I won't tell you who my friend is, but I have a friend, believe me, it happened. An unsolicited text describing me this way and as a fudge packer. So I'm telling you about a guy who said something to another guy and he called me a name. And then he finishes with, I'll be circling back to you in due course, a threat. This is journalism. This is what Neuwirth, who founded the USA Today, called the root of all evil in journalism. Anonymous sources. That's what we've got from Amon Lynch. It was an absolute disgrace to the word journalist. He is garbage. Ooh,
such a fine point on that. The issue, it's like everyone's just in a race to break the story and be the first, and they don't give a rip about their batting average, right? They don't care if they're batting, you know, 250, 220 below the Mendoza line. They're just going to keep firing away until they hit one.
J-Score, tell me, why did the public need to know what allegedly happened at the Hotel DuPont between Tiger Woods, Rory McIlroy, and the 12 best players in golf? Why did we need to know what happened that night such that Alan Shipnuck had to tell us one thing, No Laying Up had to tell us another thing, and then need to bicker about which one of them was more right? When the next day we were going to have Jay Monahan give us a press conference and give us the official word. It's nothing but clout chasing.
Clout chasing. Bingo. Lastly, the timing here, Duff, it could be an Illuminati plant distraction story. Amon doesn't want to continue to try to answer the question about LET. You know, that's just exhausting for him to work through those mental gymnastics. So a lot easier to just drum up some other noise to attract golf Twitter.
Yeah. I mean, listen, it's not as easy for Amon to be the woke warrior when it comes to crapping all over women. the reality is, the biggest issue is that it's his employer, the Golf Channel. They're all too happy to do business with the LET. They're all too happy to do business with Aramco to air those events. Whether it's, I don't know, whether it's by a time buy or part of the contractual agreement with the LET, but they'll put them on. And he doesn't want to deal with that. He doesn't want to grapple with that. I'm done with it. Congratulations to Lexi. Big fan of hers. First win in a few years.
Puma Tour staff may be trending across the board here with Lexi, Ricky, and Bryson maybe finally finding some form. So
yeah,
maybe, Puma and Cobra maybe happy.
Puma and Cobra, they sent out a press release. They're very excited. They're very proud of Lexi for her win. We're proud of her too. Good for you, Lexi. All right, moving on. We got another one. There was an old people event this week, the SAS Championship. JT, I think that's you, baby.
Oh, yes. Ladies and gentlemen, after 1,939 long days, Fred Couples is back in the winner's circle.
Hater and loser. Hater and loser, Fred Couples?
The biggest hater and loser, has spent a few years not winning golf tournaments on the senior circuit, being the best assistant captain that money can't buy. But he's back after firing a 12 under 60 on Sunday.
Wow.
Had not won, like I said, in over 3 years.
How old is he?
Won by 6 shots. He's 63 years old.
Beat his age by 3, JT.
What does that do to the rest of us? The crazy thing is he's like 4 behind after 5, and he winds up winning by 6. He birdied 12 of the last 14 holes. Fred doesn't understand anything about the golf landscape, and we've covered all of that, and we won't rehash those for you. They're in past episodes. Check out the catalog.
Are you back on the Fred Couples train?
Anywhere you get your podcast, absolutely not.
Okay.
But I want to say that you can't take away from someone who does something on the golf course. And as a golfer, Fred still got it.
Well,
something sad, though. The playoffs, the Charles Schwab Cup is coming up. There are 3 events left. Kind of, they still have a senior cash grab, and he's pulling out of all of those and not playing. That was never part of the plan. Obviously, wasn't highly ranked enough. Just got up to 34th on the cocktail circuit money list after this win.
We've got
packing it in for the year. He's saving his back for next year.
Yeah, we've got to give him credit for that, right? I mean, he's got a chance at this is a cash grab, isn't it? And he's passing it up. He says he wants to go watch playoff games, West Coast playoff games, Padres games.
You know, good for him. He did just get married last year, so maybe spending some quality time at home. Who knows what the future holds for him, but it does not hold any golf for the rest of this calendar year. Cheers to Fred Couples, the Senior Tour winner of the week.
Champions Tour. So Couples hadn't won since the American Family Insurance Championship in May of 2017. This was his 14th victory on the PGA Tour Championship. That's wild. So he got there. This is what happens with these guys. They show up and they just win in bunches. Unless you're Bernard Langer, who wins forever. Freddie just showed up and won a ton and hadn't done it in 5 years. I thought the best quote that I read from Freddie was, "The back nine, honestly, I've shot 58 and 59 before. Never in a tournament, but for a little bit of money and stuff." And so you pay attention. I just, you know, Freddie, listen, maybe we can give Freddie a hard time for his public statements. And I don't know. He seems like maybe he wouldn't be the worst guy in the world to play a round or two with, JT, right?
Absolutely not. I mean, it pained my heart for him to be so wrong. Don't twist me like this. Don't play with my heart. But like, it pained me how wrong he is about the emergence of a competitor for the PGA Tour.
Yeah.
And I had to say something. I mean, a man's got to say something to another man when they say something they don't like. And that other man has to have the ability to respond.
Of course.
And he took all of my vitriol. And it drove him to victory, and we all win.
America you're taking credit for his win.
Well, he should take credit. Well, so here's the thing. First of all, I want to say that we here at LLG, we always have forgiveness in our hearts. So it may be that we'll play around, we'll have some friendly cash, we'll play some net golf with Freddie Couples at some point, JT. So keep that open. The door is always open.
Bridges, not walls, baby. Bring it on, Freddie.
But here's the thing. I have to ask both of you guys. Do we, and you hinted at it, do we need to start keeping an eye out for the LLG bump, like the haters and losers bump? Big win for Freddie, but that's not all. That's not all, folks. I haven't heard either of you guys mention it. Do you know who was on Freddy's bag this week?
I don't. Who was on his bag?
His name is Griffin Flesh, and he's the son of J Score hater and loser Steve Flesh. He's a serious hater and loser's bump. I bet Julie Crenshaw is out there just thriving with a Mai Tai in her hand somewhere on a beach right now.
Has to be.
Yes. So you can take credit for it, JT, and then you can take 10% of the credit for it, J Score. How about that?
Of course. Of course. But awful conditions. I'm sure I wouldn't get, you know, my lodging or better food or anything like that.
I bet Freddie's a good tipper, at least now in his gym.
I hope so. I mean, $315,000 for a 3-round event.
Think of how much more money that is than Lexi won for her Saudi Aramco champ.
It's more money than most of the women win during the year on the LPGA or LET.
Well, I don't know. The LPGA does okay. But what do you think Lexi's and Nelly's, because I'm sure they were about the same, what do you think their appearance fee was on the Aramco? I think 200.
My guess, 500. Right. Ooh, yeah. I was going to say 5.
Well, they're definitely not turning that down for sure.
Yeah, I was thinking 250 to 5 seems right.
All right. That's it. I think that's it for the recaps. You guys have anything else before we move on to upcoming events?
Wasn't that plenty, ladies and gentlemen?
All right, we got Live Miami, the team championship. It's not this week, it's the week after that. We'll do previews. OTP Lefty and I are going to be there in person. We're going to have lots of coverage. We're going to do that. This week, the PGA Tour, as we said, is in South Carolina at Congaree. Little Lord McIlroy is the defending champion, and the LPGA is in South Korea. They are doing it right. They're going to do 2 weeks or 3 weeks, in fact, over in Asia. They're in South Korea at the BMW Ladies Championship. So all the podcasts that are sponsored by BMW will probably be there covering that. Jin Young Ko is the defending champion there. Word is she will play this week. So that's good. She's been out with the wrist injury. Anything else, fellas? Oh, we got litigation update. I got to do litigation.
Yeah, I was going through my notes. I had just a couple things. We'll start first with Larry Klayman and the Zoom. I heard you set an alarm, got up early to attend the Zoom duff. What's the haps there?
As I said, I did wake up at 5:25 or some ungodly hour to get in on a Zoom from Palm Beach, Florida, in state court, where Larry Klayman has a consumer antitrust action against the PGA Tour. The thing is, this was not a hearing on the motions that the parties have filed. This was a motion calendar. So a judge goes through a bunch of people with really simple motions, and you're supposed to spend 5 minutes on each. So they got there, their name was called, and Larry Klayman started screaming about this mega law firm from New York and how they're flouting the rules and procedures of Florida State Court. And judge, we've got to hold them, and we got to do things right down here. And the judge was like, we're not going to do this right now today. And Klayman said, well, here's the thing about state court, all courts really now, but state court in particular, they're so full, they're so overwhelmed, they're so overburdened. They said that the first time that a motion could be heard was 5 months from now. That's not even that long, honestly. I've had experience in California state court longer than that. But the judge seemed somewhat interested in this case. He said, we're going to set it for faster than that. I'll tell you, I read some of the briefing that has been filed in this case, and Klayman is filing what you would expect from Klayman, but I've been a little bit surprised by what I'm seeing from the PGA Tour's lawyers, who I think are from Skadden, and maybe Sidley was their Florida attorney, but going real ad hom on Klayman, which I think is a mistake. The judge knows who Larry Klayman is. You don't have to do that. And so filling your motion full of, and this guy has been brought up on charges in this district and people make fun of him here and look at this press release, that's a bad move. Generally what these big law firms do, you try to stay above that fray. When they're waving their arms and screaming, you want to say, Your Honor, this is the law that we're resting on. These are the facts of this case, and this is why we should win. And dipping down to ad hom level, bad look for the PGA Tour, I think. I don't think it'll matter. Maybe it won't matter. But, if you're trying to get the judge on your side, it's not the right move. So We'll see. They haven't set another date for when this actual motion will be heard. I told you it's Klayman filing a motion for sanctions against the PGA Tour because he served discovery requests that they haven't responded to. And the PGA Tour is filing motions for protective orders, basically asking the judge to allow them not to have to provide Jay Monahan and Tiger Woods and Rory McIlroy for depositions until at least their motion to dismiss has been heard. So it's going to be a while. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. Still looking forward to some of that stuff leaking out and dispositions and things like that just continuing to pour out. But the only other thing I thought of when we were talking about the LLG bump for haters and losers, perhaps a sign. I had this note. We forgot to touch on it during the Live Jetta recap, but I wanted to say Faherty mentioned during the broadcast a Paul Casey putt worth hundreds of thousands of dollars. He was mentioning the money. And last episode we talked about how it's kind of different and awkward. So maybe LLG's influence. Is Faherty a listener? Oh. I don't know, but I'd love to see that.
I appreciate that. And there's one more thing I do want to mention about the litigation. I have been following the docket, of course. The only thing that happened in the main case, that is the case in the Northern District of California between Live Golf and a couple of its players and the PGA Tour, who has now, of course, filed a counterclaim. The PGA Tour has added a few more attorneys to the record. So by my count, there are at least 7 attorneys from Kecker and Van Nest billing time to this matter, and then several more from Skadden on the PGA.
Sounds expensive.
Yeah. So we're going to talk about that as this goes on. I checked the PGA Tour Form 990 from the most recent filing years, which are 2019 and 2020. In each of those years, the PGA Tour listed as outside legal expenses just under $2 million each of those years. Look for that in 2022 to get up around, if not over, $20 million. So if there are any PGA Tour players listening to this, and if you're being told by Jay Monahan, who remember, is trying to keep his job, he's trying to make this an us versus them, that $20 million is $20 million that should otherwise be in your pocket. That's $20 million that should be in purses for the PGA Tour. And Jay Monahan, all he has to do to make this go away is to allow players to play wherever they want to, as long as they're qualified. You should know that the NCAA, during the Alston case that went up to the Supreme Court, that's the one that eventually allowed players to profit off their name, image, and likeness, ended up paying over $60 million in a single year to defend lawsuits. And they were hiring the same kind of attorneys. It's not out of the realm of possibility that the PGA Tour could be on the wrong end of an annual $40, $50, $60 million legal bill. So PGA Tour players, pay attention to what's going on. Rory McIlroy, James Hahn, those of you on the policy board, when that lawyer comes in, when the accountant comes in, and they tell you what the quarterly legal fees are, you better pay attention. You better tell it to the rest of your buddies and decide if this is really Billy Horschel, the hill you want to die on. That's it. That's what I got.
Well said. I'm out. That's all I got. I've exhausted my notes for the week.
Really looking forward to next week's golf.
See you next week.
Take care.